is. There it is. There it is. And we are back. Joshua, Nick and Josh coming to you live from the studio 2.0.
From the garage.
The Casa de lo Joshua.
Man, the studio is mobile. It goes everywhere. We set it up where we want. But this is a good setup. I told you, coming over, I like this setup. This is good. We're in the garage.
So, folks, we are back. This is Tadatus taking a dump and thinking about shit.
Yeah, that's right.
Congratulations, ladies and gentlemen. You've made it through the ride with us. Today is episode 50.
I guess we apologize for, like, the background noise. There's a little, it sounds like there's some ambient noise. And that's going to have to stay because it's a million degrees in the garage and we're hanging out in the garage. And some fans are going. So, my man, long time no talk. What has it been, like 6 months since we've spoken?
Yeah. Maybe on the record. It's been 16 seconds, but yeah. Podcast-wise, it's been a minute, but it's okay.
It's all good.
When we take the breaks, it's what allows our listening audience to really, really appreciate.
I mean, they get to want it. They get to really want the next episode. Sit back and
champing at the bit about it. Yeah.
I got it, man. So let's get into the stuff. We usually start with sports. Did you watch the game tonight? The Astros?
I did, actually.
This is baseball season.
It's on TBS and True TV, so it was HBO. Okay. HBO Max or whatever, something. I was able to stream it.
At the house?
Yeah, I was able to stream it at my house, yeah.
I got you. So you're watching at the house. Not a great game.
No, it's terrible. Stupid fucking Yankees.
It's like two losses when you lose to the Yankees. It's like you get the loss in the loss column for the standings.
Yeah.
And then it's like, God damn it, the Yankees, man.
Well, there's lots of stats about the fucking Yankees, and no pardon my French. Fuck the Yankees. It goes like this. Do you know the last time that we actually beat the New York Yankees in Houston? Don't worry, I'll tell you. It was 2022. We have fucking beat them in Houston.
Any one game or a series? One a series?
Any one game.
Any one game? Even like, is that not including playoffs or?
It's what I heard today was that the last time we beat them in Minute Maid was in 2022.
That's crazy.
Or Minute Maid, but now Daikin.
Well, yeah. So
I'm going to go back to calling it Enron, by the way.
Why not?
I think we should.
I mean, it makes as much sense as Daikin. Did you see the...
By the way, we were there on Sunday. There's no dykes anywhere. There's no dykes in this place. What it was, it was fucking dog day. People brought all their goddamn dogs. Yeah, Joshua, you're a dog lover.
Yeah.
Would you ever take your fucking dogs to
sure,
a game?
I would. Yeah.
Really?
If I had young dogs and didn't have old senior dogs...
Okay. So
poor Duchess is 16 years old. Nick, the other day, I caught her just staring at the wall. She's half blind. I think she's got cataracts.
You take Duchess there, she's going to die.
She's not going to have a heart attack. Yeah, that poor thing. I mean, it's so much. She has two stages of life. There's eating and sleeping, and that's it. That is it. Did you see this thing? I got the video. Can you see this video, by the way?
Yeah, I got it.
So this is, it was some audio. It doesn't really matter. But Fromber gives him a grand slam, and right before the grand slam, let's see if we can go back to this clip. If you look at the catcher,
you saw the face he made there.
Well, but that was the second pitch. So right before the grand slam, he's telling Fromber to step off. See him waving him off there.
Yeah.
He's telling him to step off. Okay, and then the grand slam happens. Oops. The grand slam happens. Okay. The very next pitch, he's looking. Obviously, the catcher's looking for something, and he's crossed up. Right. He's crossed up, meaning right. He's looking for a slider. He's looking for an off-speed pitch, something like that. And he like nails him in the stomach with a fastball, right? So there's some speculation like these guys aren't on the same page. But that obviously.
Well, so that makes sense on the post game when I was listening on the way over here. Ross Villarreal was doing the 10th inning show, and he had somebody talking to him about how that Fromber had issues whatever with the catcher tonight, this rookie, and he said he doesn't think this rookie will catch for him anymore the rest of the season. Just because of the issues they had, which I didn't see that.
Right,
at work, and then I heard the slam on the way home, but I didn't actually see it.
So I guess it remains to be seen what was actually going on, like who's at fault or whatever. Not that really matters. I mean, this is a rookie coming up catching, and the reason he's playing is because you have injuries everywhere.
Yeah.
And Yonner Diaz has been really not that good behind the plate this year,
and
he hasn't been that great of a hitter either. So, you know, the idea of we're swapping out Maldonado for Yonner because we're going to get some offense and we're not going to drop off too much behind the plate has been not what happened at all.
Right. Well, Caratini's on he's got a fucking concussion, so he's six days more.
You know, he was picked up to be your backup catcher. You know, and he could play a little first base and
the only other thing I saw about this video clip was that it was a still shot and it said that whatever the rookie catcher's name is, Garza.
Salazar.
I said Salazar is already over Fromber's bullshit.
Yeah, and I think that's that, you know. Fromber's been around a lot longer. Obviously, this rookie's his first game in the big leagues, I think, or at least first game that I've ever seen him in the big leagues.
It's not his first game, but this first game catching for
Fromber. There you go, catching a full game. Whatever. His tenure in the league versus Fromber, sure. And as a fan, what Fromber's done, you know, yeah, right? Yeah. You just like almost instinctively say, all right, we'll catch a rookie, you know, get over it, yada, yada. But, man, Fromber's been such a diva this year, and I think this is more of those antics, right? We saw it a couple weeks ago. He was getting into it with some players. I don't know if it was a catcher or not. After some misplays, there was a post-game interview where he was asking why players were positioned where they were in the outfield. Yeah, there's been a lot of this stuff going on with Fromber, and he's in a contract year. And, you know, the speculation is the Astros aren't going to pony up the money. You know, the same thing with Bregman. They're probably not going to. We'll make you an offer, but it's not going to be the 7 years, you know, $30 million or whatever you're looking for,
right.
You know, to be something medium to that with short years. Crane's, you know, historically not wanting to go long years. So there's you know, Fromber's likely these are the last games he's pitching in Astros uniform, right? And so that's also add that onto all this like kind of diva behavior. You know, there's one, you know, for me, I would always say that, you know, going into a contract year or that colloquialism for like this is the end of your contract, you want to show future employers your worth so they'll pony up, you know, and pay big bucks for you. He's kind of doing the opposite of that in a lot of ways.
Well, and so what's funny is I told you Sunday, Nicole and I went to the game against the Angels. We lost 3-0, shut out, boring as fuck, two hits, right? Where that grand slam lands in the Crawford boxes,
because
she got tickets to the Crawford boxes.
Yeah.
It's literally like right in front of the seats where we were sitting.
Crazy how it happens. One game later, two games and 3 days later.
Yeah, because the next game, you know, the Astros beat the Angels 8-3, so the Angels still scored 3, but the Astros decided to put up 8 the next day. Had like 12 hits. The fucking game we were at, Jordan had a hit in the first inning, and Urias got a hit in the 8th. Which is where the dude ran face first into the wall.
Yep.
Those are the only two hits.
Crazy.
I'm not one that likes to leave early, but we left early because the Astros were doing dick.
Yeah, man. I listened to let me do this real quick, and I'll tell you that part. Currently, the standings are the Astros still 3 games over Seattle because Seattle keeps losing with the Astros.
Yeah.
They're garbage as well. They got hot right after the trade deadline when they picked a bunch of players. And somehow they shrank the gap between the Astros. The Astros have played garbage baseball since the All-Star break. And yet the Astros still, you know,
by the way,
September or whatever, 32nd.
I'm glad you said that because I wanted to tell you what I learned with the stat I heard on the way over here. Do you know their record since the All-Star break?
It's probably less than 500.
It's 22-28
in the
last 50 games.
And it's been a combination of, like, bad pitching, no hitting. When you do get a good pitching performance, absolute zero hitting, no run support. Situationally hitting, they've been bad with runners in scoring position. They haven't been able to go station to station. You know, it's like this idea that just pray that Jordan comes back and he solves everybody else's swing somehow. He did get a home run 2 days ago in the Sunday night. Sunday game. So, you know, that's
not
nice.
Sunday, the Saturday game. Saturday game.
Whatever. My days are holding together.
No, it's all
so,
good.
But, you know, and it's nice to have him back, and that is going to be a thump in your offense. But, man, you need 8 other guys to start hitting the ball with any kind of consistency.
Yeah.
And you got to start getting some guys out.
So, what I was going to say was funny is on the stream broadcast, because I wasn't obviously not watching the you know, Root Sports or whatever the fucking new channel's called, Sports Houston. Anyways, Ron Darling. Space City. Ron Darling and the TNT crew was the one giving the play-by-play. And Ron Darling, like, I was getting ready to come over here, and I'm listening to his commentary. And I came out of the bedroom, and I was like, well, you know what? Fuck you very much, Ron Darling. You and your goddamn actual statistical, non-opinionated, fucking factual, you know, soliloquy. And he goes on, his soliloquy was thus. He says, you know, I just want to say this. I'm going to go on record. The Astros have got to get something figured out offensively. Not just today, not just this. He's like, if you look at the last 9-10 games, there's X amount of games that they haven't scored any runs. Then if you look at the last 20-some-odd games, you know, they scored, he said, they'll go 1 or 2 games where they'll score 8 runs, 10 runs.
Yep.
And then they'll go a 4-game stretch or a 5-game stretch where they don't score 5 runs. He said, what they need to do is get it figured out offensively. We got to get hits. We got to do this. And I'm like, well, thank you very much.
So such wise words. Yeah, you know what? You know what the Astros need to do? They really need to hit the ball more and score some more runs. And really, the other thing they can do, one more thing besides that, is just get people out and pitch better.
Yeah.
So like, come on.
You gotta score more runs.
Yeah.
Well, listen. Score basically, runs, he broke it down this way, and I love the John Madden of it.
Yeah, hit the ball.
If you want to actually win a game, you must actually score. Let's start with that. If you score, then you have a better chance of winning than if you don't score.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy that the Astros just seem like they're like if you didn't pay attention to the standings, if you weren't paying attention, just participating in the season and the roller coaster that it is, all the injuries, so on and so forth, you're just sitting back going, how's this team not in last place? You know, yeah. And currently they're 3 games ahead of Seattle for first place, and that's just insane. So as bad as the Astros been, or as mediocre, I should say, Seattle's been equally as mediocre and put them in a situation where they're still chasing. The Astros, they're going to win the division again, which is like, what, 8 out of 9 years or 7 out of 8 years, something like that.
Yeah.
I don't have a whole lot of high hopes of a deep playoff run, unless you see some guys start to get it going in the next couple weeks, or you get, you know, a combination of Yordan back, being healthy, it grooves in. Maybe you get Jake Myers back, he can show you something. I'm not. You know,
yeah, I don't
there.
Know.
There's
no consistent hitting on this team across
the board. They're still a player short. Although Christian Walker, I don't have his numbers exactly in front of me. Since the All-Star break, he's actually been the Christian Walker that we thought we were going to sign. If you take away, and of course it's not fair to take away parts of the season, but if you take away a certain portion of the season, somebody's breaking this down today. If you take out this certain section of, like, I don't know, like 35 games, he's actually having a pretty good year. And it's this person's argument was that it's not Jose Abreu. It's not that level of he's just tanked, he's just over the hill, right? It's just some maybe getting some used to a new league. You know, he was in the National League before with Arizona. So who knows? But he's been hitting the ball. He's still a solid Gold Glove first baseman, which, you know, that's a huge piece of any championship team. And now he's starting to hit the ball, starting to move runners around. So that's nice to see. Yordan's back. He hit a home run. That's nice to see, but we just need more from other players.
We need consistent hitting. Yeah, and that's just, again, I have a limited ability to watch. I watch him at work.
Payne needs to start getting grooving again. Curry needs to start getting grooving again.
But
they're gonna win the division. They're still the Astros.
They're still inevitable. They're just doing. I don't know what they're doing. They're not walking around moping, but they're.
Yeah.
There's something still missing.
There's also something, and I used to think this about Michael Jordan, and I think this is probably true for Carlos Correa. Not that the other guys on the team are necessarily veteran enough for this to really be a monster for them, but, like, I always wondered, specifically in baseball, the concept of, like, Gurriel was kind of like this as well. It's going to have this hum-ho regular season and then just get going in the playoffs.
Cranking
there's something
the playoffs,
about dialing up a notch or whatever, you know, whatever cliche words we're going to use. But those kinds of players, maybe we're going to see some of that with the Astros. Maybe that's going to ignite Carlos Correa when we get close to playoff time, something he hasn't really been a part of. You know, since he left the Astros. So maybe we get something from that, some of these guys. Although, you know what, I was going to say this, Craig Kimbrell, that's been a really nice pickup. 3 games, 3 innings pitched, no runs allowed. So that's been nice in the
absence
of Josh
Hader. Yesterday he hit 95, 96 on the radar, which was the first time he's hit that all season. I was hitting pissed a whole bunch. But that was, you know, the exaggeration on the quote was that this is the first time he's hit it in the majors in, you know, 2 years or whatever. It's like, yeah, but he didn't pitch last year, blah, 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 something of that nature. Anyways.
Gotcha. All right. Anything else on Astros? We still got some more season to go. You know, we're so lucky as Astros fans that we just get to kind of criticize them being 3 games in first place.
It is like legit golden era, and it's just absolutely. It's frustrating when we're not winning at the clip and pace that we've been so accustomed to now.
I was listening to Josh Innes has a podcast, and he was talking about, like, he was playing some clips of this guy in Philly who's like a podcaster and a sports guy, and his shtick is to just, like, lambaste the local team, just like, these guys are such it, like, in the most, like, aggressive Philly way, like, these fucking guys suck and this and that. Anyway, and Josh Innes was breaking down this idea of, like, sports fandom and how, like, you know, as you get older, that kind of turns into something a little bit different, you know, and so on and so forth. And, you know, I think that it kind of made this point about Astros fans. Like, when the team's no good, the fan base just kind of tunes out. And this is Josh Innes kind of saying this, but I kind of emulate that. It's the idea that, like, I'm freaking busy. Like, prove to me why I should pay attention to you. I don't owe you anything as a fan. You know what I mean? Like, sure. and if you're going to be a garbage team, you know, I'm not going to spend my money there for sure.
Right,
you know, that's a whole thing. But you know, the Astros specifically, and that's void of football, by the way. Like, it doesn't matter how bad the Texans ever are, they're always going to sell out. You know what I mean? This is not the town that's going to, like, abandon that team.
I mean, they did, though. They did when Cal McNair was.
But every game was sold out. Whether they showed up to the games or not, that's a different story. And, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, your protest is you pay for the ticket, you don't show up. That's football, right? Baseball is like, no, you're going to draw 12,000 fans. You're going to sell 30,000.
You're going to draw, like, the Oakland A's. You're going to draw, like, 3,000
fans. Yeah, and so, but, you know, and there's, you know, there's this idea of I was thinking something today about, like, you know, who even knows, like, what any truth is at all, ever. You know what I mean? Like, everything is opinion in some way, shape, or form, right? And I was, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's not really blue. This guy's sure. not blue. It's Azul. It's like, all right, do we agree? Do we disagree? Anyways, and I was thinking, you know what? The truths I have, MFers, that the Astros won 2 world championships. And
they've been to 4 in the last 6 years, so fuck
well,
you.
Well, I'm just saying that they won those 2. The other thing I was going to say is Arsenal have an undefeated season. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can't take those 2 truths away from me ever, never, ever, ever, ever. And that's, like, my level of fandom. You know what I mean? And those are the only 2 teams that I would ever, like, support in their down years. But, like, you know, what does that mean? Right? It's like, I'm not going to the games or whatever. Anyways, I just thought that was an interesting, like, this is the golden era of Astros baseball. It's never been as good as this. I mean, no. It's never been as good as this. It's never been ever that we take for granted a bad performance in September, 3 games ahead of our next closest, you know what I mean, winning the division against a team that we pretty much own in the playoffs, the Yankees. You know what I mean? Yeah. I know it's all those things because it's the Yankees and this and that, but we're just lucky that we have, you know what I mean, like, cross-divisional rivals. Like, it means something because we spend a lot of time in the playoffs as they do.
Well, it adds to it, though, also. Every time it's the fucking Yankees, there are half the goddamn stadium was Yankees fans tonight. There's so many people in this town that love other, you know.
That's everywhere, though. Yankees draw everywhere.
Yankees, Dodgers. Yeah. You have a bunch of people here that all of a sudden love. I don't know. They piss me off.
That's another, like, the fair weather, or not fair weather fan, but like that
front bandwagon.
They're like front runners. You know what I mean? It's like.
I've always been a Warriors fan.
Yeah, it's like.
Except for now they're not winning, so I don't care about them anymore.
These people were Bulls fans in the 90s, right? They were Yankees fans in the 90s. Then, you know, then they were Patriots fans.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Right? Then they were.
Yeah. Tried and true. I love Dodgers, Boston.
Right. And, like, okay, you know what? I kind of want to mock that because it seems so loose, but there's also, like, you know what? You fan how you want to fan. You know what I mean? Like, who am I to say? Let's quick transition into a little bit of foosball, because if football season did start college-wise, anyways, this weekend. I know you're a big college football fan. Check this out, Nick. I paid attention to, at least score-watched, 2 different college football games this weekend. Would you dare to guess which 2 of those games were?
It was the Texas-Ohio State game.
Got that one. Okay, what do you think the other one was? It's not Texas A&M. I'll just let you know that.
Your other one would have been LSU-Clemson.
No. Interestingly enough, it was UNC-TCU.
Oh, you wanted to see fucking Bill Belichick?
It was a touch accidental. It just popped up that the game was going to come on at a certain time when I was, you know what I mean, whatever. But yeah, I was kind of curious because Bill Belichick is not, he's not just Bill Belichick, former NFL, maybe greatest coach of all time, whole bunch of rings, you know, put a statue outside the stadium, Bill Belichick, who didn't really flame out, but, you know, everything runs its course. Sure. And then, you know, and then goes back to college football. It's not just that. That's a story in itself, right?
And then the girlfriend
There's the 20-something-year-old girlfriend.
Like, ex-Twitter has just gone. I saw a bunch of that today. That was making me laugh.
And
it was,
you know,
like, it showed practices where she's helping. And then
she's on the field, bro, wearing, like, tight britches.
And then it showed the game, and, like, she's on the sideline, and the caption was, "Can I have $20 for the concession stand?"
I saw that one too. Yeah. But that's what's so interesting. And I wonder, you know what? Now that I'm saying this out loud, I wonder if he's clever. If he's a clever cat, that's just a way to get some more attention over to UNC football. I don't know.
Maybe I don't know. It's so antithetical to Belichick, though. Like, or at least as I come to learn. And
seems like it too, right? Seems like this guy's
the gospel of Belichick, the religion of Belichick, right? It's there's no emotion, and it's you know,
everybody's a job. Yeah, it's pass fail. You do your job or you don't do your job, right?
Yeah.
It does seem, that's a really good point. It does seem kind of outside of that character of, you know, grizzled old man, and everything has a place and a purpose, and you know, everything's connected.
But this could also be exactly that. This could be a part of a ploy, him not actually caring, like just one last grasp at fucking fame.
Maybe it's just she makes him happy, and that's just something that works for them.
Yeah, well, tell his face that. Like, tell him to tell his face that he's happy.
Well, that's how he expresses his happiness. Like, think about this. How about this? Let me paint a picture to see if you would sign up for this. Like, if you had a personal assistant who was hot, who you could also sleep with, does that not seem like some kind of a utopian relationship? You know what I'm saying? I think that's kind of what it is. It's like, You know what I mean? Like, I need someone to, like, you know, help me get on the Google machine and check, make sure my bills are paid. And, you know what I mean? And also, nice, sweet ass. I don't know.
I like how you said it, the Google machine, because what? I could
Isn't
see.
Isn't that how he says it?
Like, yeah, I mean, you could see Belichick just living that life. Like, he's that fucking boomer, that anti-technology and all that shit, right? But still
knows
you have to use it, have to do something with it, but... That's why he's got her. That's her job at her place.
What did you think about the Ohio State-Texas game? Were you firmly rooting against Texas always, forever, whatever, whoever they're playing? You're at minimum for the other team.
I'm not. I don't bear ill will anymore. Gotcha. For the Longhorns.
That's definitely Kevin did that, right?
Yeah, I was rooting against UT.
Okay.
I was honestly initially I was interested to see what old Arch Manning was going to do, because last year, we know he played. It was a different line, a different time. He had time to both run and throw.
Wasn't there also some in-and-out quarterback? He wasn't the all-time starter for the whole season. So this is like his first time to be, he had
spot roles where he came and played.
What I'm saying is this is like from preseason, it's his team. That element, he's never had that before. So it's the first time.
Yeah.
Also, first big game. Also, the name on your bag, like, you know what I mean?
It's not even first big game. Like, you're ranked number one in the nation. You're going to the horseshoe.
Yeah, I mean, first big game of the season under that.
I'm at all of that.
Yeah, under those circumstances. This is a top five ranked teams. You're the number one ranked. You also have a name on your back, which everybody, you know, kind of expects greatness, so on and so forth. I got to see a little bit about his dad, by the way, which is curious and interesting.
Cooper Manning.
He was a receiver.
Yeah, he's a wide receiver.
I think he got injured why his career was cut short.
He was the one of the family that actually wasn't that good at football. Like, he by comparison, again, is what I'm saying.
I disagree. The way I saw it, he was just a receiver, just played a different position.
No. I know he was a decent receiver, but he wasn't. It's what I'm saying is. By him, not good. He wasn't as good as Archie or either Peyton or Eli, because Cooper didn't make it to the NFL.
Right, but I think he got injured. And that's why he didn't play college football. I think there was a whole thing about him and Peyton. He was supposed to catch balls from Peyton his senior year or something like that. And he got injured and then didn't have that career. And I think it was more injury than
fair.
Because I think he was.
Either way, just added to the joke I was saying at the beginning. Was it? Remember. When we got to the fucking Buffalo Wild Wings, I told him, I said, remember, or let's look at Arch Manning. I said, oh, that's right. You know, you're at that point, he was 5-10 for 25 yards, late in the second quarter, about to go to half. And I was like, well, that's why you're losing, because your numbers suck and you suck. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. You're the son of the Manning that actually wasn't that good at football. And again, I know.
Yeah,
it was just added to the joke.
I mean, it's funny, but to me, did you hear the story about Peyton Manning and U of A or UT?
No.
Have you ever heard that story? So I'm going to mess it up, but it goes something like, when he was being recruited, right, to go to Tennessee, UT brought him in, and I forget the coach's name. Sarkisian? I can't remember. But the coach he was supposed to meet with didn't even meet with him. So he's meeting, like, the quarterback's coach, and he's like, oh, I thought we were going to watch some film and do this
to
and that.
To the University of Texas?
Yeah, University of Texas. This is Peyton Manning during his recruiting, right? Yeah, you know, he's one of the top prospect high school kids, you know, so on and so forth. And, like, he basically felt like he was blown off. He's like, he got to talk to the assistant coach, the quarterback's coach, not the head coach. He's like, well, where do you see me? And he's like, yeah, you're one of the 12 guys we're looking at. You know what I mean? Just did not make him feel any kind of something. And it was like, whatever. And so.
The Heisman Trophy winner was one of the 12 we're looking at.
I think Heisman runner-up, I think is what he was. Did you win Heisman, Peyton?
No, you're right. He lost to Charles Woodson. He was the number one pick, but Charles Woodson won the Heisman.
So, yeah, so. Anyways, that was an interesting story, and they were saying that in the they're lucky that it wasn't Peyton's son who was being recruited by UT, because he may have turned him a different direction, you know, been scorned from before, like you know what I'm saying,
that
lingering thing, right? And so lucky it was Cooper, right? Cooper's Arches, Cooper's kid, Cooper Manning, and so that's what kind of brought him to UT. Anyways, it's an interesting story. It's an interesting, like, man, we don't have. Nick, I can't think of any. There's a couple son, father-son combos that played sports together. Not together necessarily, but in the same sport or in other sports. But I don't know if we have a lineage of three athletes this prominent. Who knows if Arch makes the pros or not, but at least he's playing high-level college football, right? Like, this is Archie Manning played professional quarterback, so obviously played high-level college quarterback and then played in the pros. Obviously, the two Manning brothers, and now this is the third generation of Mannings. Not necessarily the same, you know, it's not grandfather, father, son necessarily.
Sure, but it is in the same grandson. It's grandfather.
Right, it is in the same family tree for sure.
Grandson.
I can't think of any other that are three deep that are that prominent. You know.
No, I mean there. You have Lonzo and LaMelo Ball and their dad. That's not it. No, you have Dion and his boys. And no, that's not it either.
I mean, you think even like in baseball, the Griffies have to play together in the same same game once, or a couple times at least, the same season. That's pretty unique. I was thinking just now about the concept of how difficult it is to like live in your father's, you know, shadow necessarily, sure. Right? And then play, and you see that with Shedeur Sanders, you see that with the Mannings, so on and so forth. And Archie Manning was a professional football player, so, and I think a pretty darn good one. And so that's rare that you have a, you know, those like sure. that and Peyton Manning and Eli's Manning, so on and so forth. But I was reminded of, I heard a story today. It was Mr. T's daughter is a comedian, and she was telling a story.
Yes, I pity the fool.
Yes, she was telling the story, and I listened to a little bit of hers, and she's telling the story about, you don't understand how difficult it is to be Mr. T's daughter. Maybe after the break I'll pull it up and listen to it. But she tells a story about, the story basically is like, the bit is, you know, I had to kind of keep some of these experiences to myself. I was one time I was hanging out, and my dad was at WrestleMania, and Roddy Piper broke his ribs, and there was this fight in the hotel room between Hulk Hogan after he just does a line of coke. Anyways, she's like telling this like really crazy story, and she's like, and nobody would believe me, you know what I mean? And like that's the teacher said, yeah, right, you know what I'm saying? So she's like, I just have to keep some of these stories to myself because who's going to believe me? And then she also talked about how, like she grew up in one part of her life, you know, I guess my dad was doing well. Like, we grew up in a nice neighborhood, and, like, I tell people Mr. T's and my dad, and they're like, oh, that's why your black ass is here. And it's like, right?
See, and I thought you were going to go, though, when she's telling the stories. Like, in my mind, and I'm going to just retell it here, is that as that story starts, she tells the story, and she says it goes like this. I said, I pity the fool that did this, whatever it was. And she says it over and over.
Not quite. I just wanted to say that. She's not quite leaning in that much, but she's using her dad. Anyways, all right, so back to football. So college football, like I did tune a little bit. You know, I didn't watch play and play out of the Ohio State Texas game. It kind of was like a boring game. A couple times I tuned in.
Yeah, we were at Buffalo Wild Wings and we had it on.
Whatever that means for college football. I'll try to pay attention a little more this year and see his rank, so on and so forth. But I think that first kind of big game, and God bless college football for not like letting all the games in the first couple weeks just be like Alabama versus me and you. You know what I'm saying? Like it just seems like. You know, these big, huge schools play these powder puffs to kind of, you know, get some reps in. And so, thank goodness for Texas and OU jumping out of the gate.
Yeah.
They jumped having a slobber knocker.
Listen, my Georgia Bulldogs, they played Marshall.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, right? It's like, I'm going to watch the game from a fan.
But it was 45-7.
So, all right. So the NFL starts this week. I think, is it Thursday night's the first game? Is it a Thursday night game? Me either, Nick. Why don't we know this? I used to know exactly what time.
I know that the Texans play the Rams.
And when do they play?
Sunday at 3:25.
Sunday. Oh, it's a 3 o'clock game. That's fascinating.
I know that because, again, on HBO Max or whatever the hell I was watching the Strohs on tonight, that stream is available Sunday.
Okay.
I was like, really?
Okay, I got you. So check this out. So Sunday night, I was sitting here, and I'm like, I don't know if you remember last time I told you. I was like, man, I've been thinking about fantasy football, this and that. Yeah. And so I'm like, let me just see. And I actually tried two different apps. I couldn't get into Yahoo, but I got into ESPN, and I drafted a team.
It was Kevin that sent the fucking that fantasy football punishment.
Yeah, what did you think about that? That wasn't too hard. What was it? Remind the
guys. So it said that the punishment for losing the league was that the loser had to go to a sperm bank and donate sperm. And then on the paperwork, he had to check the box that said they allowed the person, the donor sperm, to contact him once they're 18 years old. And I was like, God damn, that's a punishment. What
I don't know. That, I don't know. That doesn't seem too crazy for me.
It's just the concept of it. My thought is, right, you go donate sperm, and that you're not involved in that person's life at all. Right. And then at 18 years from whenever, then they decide to reach out to you. Like, that is...
Well, I mean...
That's a long game punishment for right, fucking okay, fantasy
so,
football.
So are you... Is it fair to say by that story and how you responded to it that if you were to give... sperm, you'd otherwise not check that box, right? Like,
I guess. You know,
okay,
I don't
know. So like, I don't know. Like, to me, what does that mean? Like, both contexts, you're giving sperm, and they may make a baby out of it, right? But the idea of them contact for like, it wouldn't bother me at all. Like, it would be like if someone contacted me 20 years later, and they were like, hey, you check this box and this thing that was made in a test tube and yada yada. I'm like, holy shit. Never in a million years would I have guessed that my fantasy football punishment would have come true like that. It would have been like the most amazing story ever.
Okay,
so I wouldn't be where, like, it didn't, to me, it'd be like, what a cool story. I've seen some that are just downright.
Well, my mind jumped to the Family Guy episode where Peter had donated a bunch of sperm and then all the fucking kids come back at one time and there's like 100 of them that show up.
Yeah, I've seen worse fantasy football punishments. And I like this, by the way. We never did this in any leagues we did. But like one I saw, it was they made the loser try out for, it was like the Minnesota Vikings, like color guard or something like that. And so we had to put together a symbols routine to like the Pussycat Dolls or something like that.
That's,
you know,
outstanding.
What I mean? Right? Like, and so the boys would video it. So like that to me is way more fun than.
Well, the league that I went to when I moved to West Palm, the league there. Most of them, four of the 10 people or whatever were family members, like father, son, and like uncle, nephew or something, right? The punishment that they had done a couple times was a tattoo. And so
I can't do that, though.
No, well, so like the dad was an Eagles fan, and rest his soul, Mr. Pepper. Yeah.
Is it of their opposite team or something
like
that?
Yeah, so he's an Eagles fan. He's an Eagles fan. His son's a Giants fan.
So it was the opposite.
Chris DiMario was a Steelers fan, and somebody else was a Lions fan. That's where you go. So you got cross rivalries from the division each way.
Yeah.
And they're the ones that agreed to that tattoo thing.
I mean, I've never...
And so both Jason and Jared, the dad and the son, they had... Jason is a fucking he liked the Eagles. He had a Cowboys tattoo, and Jared is a Cowboys fan. He had a fucking Eagles tattoo.
Yeah,
it's just the logo, but still is that's pretty fucking funny.
Yeah, I just can't do tattoos. I don't have any tattoos anyway, so I don't know if I'd let some sports team. Like, I don't even want to put my own favorite sports teams on me. But
yet.
All right, we're getting about halfway through. Do you want to keep going a little bit? Do you want to extend it? Did you see the video of the ambidextrous? Do you have anything else to talk about football? I mean, anything else about football? Do you want to hear about my fantasy team to tell me if I'm going to win the league or not? Let me tell you my team, because here's
First
how
First of all, we need to know your team name. That's basically where I can tell you
it just says Josh's scary team.
No, then you're not going to win the league then.
That's just what it gave me. Although, you're not gonna win, you know, the league. I told you, no. I did.
Half of fantasy football is a team name, and yours is Josh's scary team.
Hold on. I asked for ChatGPT to give me some names. Okay.
Why don't you just call yourself the 85 Bears?
It came up with... Let me show you what it came up with. Tyreek and Destroy, because I got Tyreek Hill. Tyreek and Destroy.
Mm-hmm.
That's not bad, yeah? Here's the logo that ChatGPT created for me. Yeah? Okay, not bad. That's,
I like that.
That's
gives
one.
You logos, too.
Here's, no, I said create this. That's the second one.
That's pretty good. I like that one better.
Yeah, me too. I like that one better. Okay, so let me tell you, how about this? We'll play a game, and losers take a shot, and then we'll take a break. I don't know any of these players, okay? It says their first initial and their last name, all right?
Okay.
All right, if you can name, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 starters. If you can name 5 of the first names of... the starters, well, it's going to be 8 because the Steelers is one of the teams. Anyways, I'm just saying, if you can name the first names, because I don't know the first names, to see who knows more about sports, the other person's taking a shot. That's just the game. The first quarter, it's a quarterback named Jay Daniels.
Josh Daniels.
Nope. His name is Jaden Daniels.
Oh, that's the Redskins or Commanders.
You know what? I like him, by the way.
Yeah.
He's the LSU guy?
Yeah.
You know why I like him? I think I talked about this before. I maybe talked about the podcast. He's the one who has the virtual reality training.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. A Gianti, Gianti.
Ashton Gianti. Ashton Gianti. That's the running back.
Good one.
That's the running back out of Boise State.
All right, next one is T. Tracy Jr.
T. Tracy Jr.?
Uh-huh.
No idea.
T. Tracy Jr. is Tyrone. All right, the next one should be easy. T. Hill.
Tyreek.
Because we already said the name of the name. St. Dot Brown, St. Brown. I don't know, man.
I'm on St. Brown.
Is that okay? You get 3 now. That's 3. M. Andrews is a tight end. Baltimore tight end. M. Andrews.
Mike Andrews.
Is it Mike Andrews? It Mark.
Mark Close. Andrews.
How about Evans, receiver from Tampa Bay? You should know this guy.
Mike Evans.
There you go. And then the kicker's name is McLaughlin. McLaughlin. C. McLaughlin.
I don't know. I was watching the 86 Bears there get body slammed.
You tuned out. You don't even care about the guy's names.
No, I gave you four.
I understand it, man. All right, here we go. Time to break. That was the shortest break. We took 12 seconds to pause. It was like a just like a timeout. I'm just kidding. We've been gone for like 2 hours. Forgot what we were talking about. We're back in the podcast. We're back to Tadatus. Second half of the show. We're going to talk about...
I may or may not have had one whole whiskey, and this is the second beer.
We used to say second this this second podcast beer. Is brought to you by...
We forgot about that.
Tin Cup. But we're drinking Tin Cup. We're drinking Miller Lite. We're drinking wine. We're all over the place.
It's brought to you by alcohol.
It's brought to you by... it's been too long. All right, so we wanted to come back and talk about a book that I introduced you to, which I read a long time ago, and I reread it again, which is, it's just brilliant. It's by Anthony Bourdain. It's called Kitchen Confidential. Give me your kind of early takes on it. We'll kind of discuss it for a few minutes.
So say that, you brought the book into my universe, but it was like 2 days before that. I told you, I'd started watching his show, No Reservations.
Okay.
And I just put that on kind of like his background noise at the house. And then the day that you and I talked to about when you introduced the book to me was the day that I was getting ready and Nicole was watching that episode, third episode, season one, and he said, my phrase, right? There's nowhere else I'd rather be on this plane of existence than right here, right now with you. And when she paused it, she said, oh my God, you talk about universe, verbatim quote, right? You and I talked about that night. That's when you mentioned the book and we dove into it from that moment on.
To me, there's an element of, like, first of all, the phrase, which is, I know you said a lot, and I appreciate it deeply, but the concept of, like, just taking a moment to stop and say, this experience we're having together, the conversation, the moment, whatever, like, it is, like, so purposeful and meaningful, and, like, you know, qualifying it by saying, you know, I couldn't imagine a place I'd rather be than right here, right now. There's something about just slowing down and stopping and taking the time to acknowledge that, number one, but also like the meaningful moment of like just recognizing that it is so special, human connection, conversation.
I go all the way back to everything.
And so then
Gabriel shared, right? Be present. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah, that's another, I think that's another element of it. So you've had this mantra, you've spoken a lot, and then you start checking out this show, and the host, the famous chef host, Anthony Bourdain, you know, regurgitates your famous line, right? And you're not even there to hear or see it. It's Nicole that necessarily kind of points it out to you, right? And that's kind of the journey on this book. Is Nicole said, do you realize that Anthony Bourdain just said that? And you're like, what the
like verbatim. Yeah.
And I think
that same day you introduced that
night,
me to the book.
That night I was over at your house hanging out, and you said that. He's like, you'll never believe this. And I said, oh my goodness, let me kind of go down a bit of a, I don't know, a deep dive of Anthony Bourdain, Anthony Bourdain is hits different for me because, number one, I was exposed to this book, but also, like, my engagement with the restaurant space. And I read Anthony Bourdain in my early manager career, and it just stuck with me. So when you told me that story, I was like, man, you know, if you're in this space, and guess what? You happen to be just finishing a book. I said, if you're in the space and start a new book, you should go read Anthony Bourdain's Kitchen Confidential. And so you did.
Yeah, and I devoured that one. It was, and then in the midst of that book, remember when I was leaving work that day, I called you, and you happened to be hanging out with Jeremy. And he happened to also just be rereading that book. And it was the chapter where he was talking. He made the quote. He said, in the kitchen, there's two rules. Don't touch my dick and don't touch my mise en place.
Don't touch my knife, but
it's three. Don't touch my knife. Don't touch my dick. Don't touch my mise en place.
I think it's don't touch my knife. Don't touch my dick. But like the idea of like don't fuck with my mise en place is an extrapolation of that. But yeah.
All the same, yes. But yeah,
So for me, like I don't have a lot.
So when I called you that night, you happened to be with Jeremy, who had just happened to start rereading the book and all of that, you know.
Yeah, it was really interesting, like, you know, multiple angles of bringing
universe,
this.
Universe.
Did I ever break down, you know, I watched a documentary the other day. I was kind of bored, and I was like, let me find something. And there's a couple of documentaries called Roadrunner on HBO. And
Roadrunner?
Yeah, Roadrunner. Meep? And it's talking about, like,
you
it's...
You ignored the meep meep.
I missed it.
I said Roadrunner. Meep meep.
Okay. All right. You know what? We'll edit that part out. I'm going to go. We'll edit that out.
Wow, look at that.
I know. We're going to edit that out.
Okay.
The documentary, though, was kind of like his life. And so there's a point where they're talking to all his friends and so on and so forth. And, of course, this is posthumously done a documentary. And they're like, yeah, you know, he killed himself. And it's like, that's part of the story. That's kind of part of the fucking journey. And there's also some conspiracy. Did I ever tell you about the conspiracy theory angle attached with Anthony Bourdain?
He committed suicide the same way that Chris Cornell and Chester Bennington did. Yeah.
And so the
ritualistic autoerotic asphyxiation, hanging yourself from a doorknob with a tie. Yeah.
The conspiracy is that when you see people die like that,
that's akin to a message.
Yeah, it's when the thems and theys kill you in a certain way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they all happen to be doing and going after a certain, you know, set or group to, you know, we're just going to leave it at that. Yeah, that stuff. Yes. Have you seen, so you're familiar with the band Bad Wolves that did that cover of
I think so, yeah.
Zombie?
Okay.
And so Tommy Vax, the lead singer, he broke off of them and they did a cover of Crawling. And then he's done a solo version of it on his own. And in the video, there's pictures of Chris Cornell, Chester Pennington, Anthony Bourdain, a couple other people that are also all died in the same manner. That each of their pictures burns throughout the video.
Yeah, it's one of those things. You start tying things together. You know, like I'm in a space in my life, Nick, where I just kind of like start off, or maybe just reanalyze everything I thought was truth and just. Like just questioning it. You know what I mean? We talked about the moon landing earlier and so on and so forth. How about this? I think it's a great segue to Stephen Hawking. I have a video here that I'd like you to watch.
Let's do that, and then we'll go to the one I was watching, yeah. Rogan and...
It looks exactly like Larry
Bird. This is...
tell me if...
There we go. Okay.
Well, let's take a quick look at Stephen Hawking. I've talked a lot about how Stephen Hawking was not a real...
By the way, this is Owen Daniels. Owen Benjamin. He's a comedian. Yeah, so this is going to be kind of like setting the comedic kind of tone, if you will.
Person. He was a character. And people say, how dare you, Big Bear? How dare you? What? When Dave Chappelle makes fun of it in 5 years, we'll discuss it. But this is an actual translation. Before his robot voice, he had a translator who looks exactly like Larry Bird. Tell me if you think that anything about this is real.
I think, in a way, physics has been a progress away from mysticism. Towards a rational understanding of the universe.
Stephen, when did you first realize you wanted to be a physicist?
I think I knew from about the age of 9 or 10 that I wanted to be a scientist.
It's way too loud.
Most of my activities, like playing with model fireworks. Or model railways, or playing complicated games, was aimed in some way at finding out how the world worked around me. I was never very good with my hands, and my models did not work very well.
I mean, this dude's grunting, and he's saying the same complete sentences.
We can all see that this is not real at all. It was normalized by Han Solo and Chewbacca. As you can see there, on the left is Han Solo. And on the right is Chewbacca. No one understands the grunting.
That's pretty accurate.
Gurgling. There is no way that the gurgling, and this is why the internet changed the entire game with scams. Is back in the day, a lot of people were not exposed to people that treat people with ALS or a lot of these ailments.
But nowadays, we have translated them into studying.
I mean, they're so serious watching this.
By far, is this guy, because I think he's watching this whole thing, like, just don't point out that this isn't real. Yeah, ALS, once you're diagnosed, you typically have 5 years till you're dead, and your brain deteriorates until you can barely speak or know your name. So, Stephen Hawking, they claim, says he had it for over 40 years, and he was the smartest person in the world. And all they had to do was program a robot voice. It was like, there is no God. But it was completely insane. Let's say you are the one in a million. I don't think anyone's ever lived 40 years with ALS, but let's say it's a miracle and you do. Your cognitive function would be almost zero. Your IQ would probably be around 30. And that's the funniest part. Is not only are they saying
yeah,
you
but
can
that's
function,
a definitive statement.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, the analysis is from a comedian, so on and so forth. But it's one of those things where it's like, okay, what benefit would anybody get from faking Stephen Hawking? Like, what is what? Like, what is the point of
sure.
it? Okay, and like, I don't mean that to like.
No,
to,
I don't think you do. I think well, you're taking it in a literal question. If nothing about that looked like it was fun, so what would be the benefit of actually doing?
Well, I mean,
that,
like you could say something like, what would be the benefit? Like, I don't know, giving like people a hope or like, you know, something like that. But the idea that they're propagating some kind of like theoretical physics or something, you know what I mean? This idea that this person is able to otherwise understand and then write books and so on and so forth. It's like, I don't know, for the first time in my life, I'm just like looking at that going, when it's presented like that, it's like, well, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Does that change how you feel about once he had his robot voice?
No, I think it's all a ruse. I think the robot voice was so that they didn't have to have that translator come around and like fake pretend that he was otherwise translating that gobbledygook.
Well, it also sounded like Owen Benjamin was, yes, jokingly, but he's also saying that he didn't in fact have ALS because no one who ever had ALS lives that long with it, unless their brain was
I mean, I don't know what his overall, I don't know what the whole overall argument. To me, the idea is that the entity we are presented as Stephen Hawking being like one of the smartest men, you know what I mean, on the planet.
How about this? I want to tell you what I think the actual message, if I may, what I feel like it's something akin to what I would understand your shift on what's the fucking Helen Keller.
I think that's a very, we've talked about that before. I think that's very akin to this. It's like,
there you go.
When you start like just thinking through these ideas, you know what I mean?
You almost dumped that over there, buddy.
That's fine. In the space of like, you know, what else did they lie to us about? That's where it starts. Okay. Right. We talked about the moon landing.
Okay. So that let's go with that. So I was watching Rogan and I've been rewatching the one, Jesus Christ. It's the guy that fucking Area 51, but he was actually not Area 51. He was Area 14, whatever. He's on there. Hold on, I'm gonna pull it up. You're gonna fill some space here while I look it up. Okay, hang on.
I don't know what you're getting at, but to me, the Stephen Hawking thing, the Helen Keller thing, is when, you know, and I think even Owen Benjamin talks about how the internet broke it all, right? Because when you're just given the limited amount of, like, information you're given in any kind of, like, you know, pre-internet space, right? It's like everything is the gospel, you know? Like, who am I to disprove it, you know? Then the internet came around, and people had, you know, contrarian kind of ideas about things, and people started to go, okay, well, I mean, that kind of makes sense by this, and, like, what does that mean, right? And so a lot of these narratives are being broken down. You almost there? Stephen Hawking, well, this is an interesting one to me because I'd heard about Stephen Hawking not being this brilliant scientist and so forth, but I don't ever think...
Yeah, don't they?
I don't remember the idea of how phony it looks when he has an interpreter.
Well, I've never seen that before.
Right. Like, the robot voice, you kind of think, like, oh, they must have some kind of, like, special, you know, tapped into his brain where he's able to, like, blink.
As far
and,
as
like,
I understood it, there's something that he can... He's looking at the letters. And
he can,
up, you know,
yeah, he can communicate, like, with his eyeballs. He's so clever, so on and so forth. And then, like, you see this interpreter, and the guy's quite literally just mumbling. Like, I don't even know if he even understands he's being asked questions. It's just a gurgling noise, and the guy's like, yes, I started to be a scientist when my mother and father taught me about planets. It's like, what?
Well, also, how about this?
This is what he actually said. What he actually said is like,
Hold on. Let's go the complete other way. Let's go, which straw man, steel man, which is the one trying to prop it up and give it all the credit?
Steel man is trying to, like, add credence to it.
All right, so let's go steel man with it. Let's say that this was a discussion beforehand in a different manner. They actually communicate and discuss what the questions are, so no matter what noises you make,
or even
this is predetermined what our answers are going to be.
How about this? Let's even give it that.
Does that make sense what I'm saying?
Like, even maybe more deep than that, this interpreter must spend some kind of, like, intimate time with this person to understand.
What if Stephen talking that way, he understands him the way I hear Gabriel.
Maybe. That's what I'm saying. Yeah, like maybe this person's either so in tune to Stephen Hawking, or he's so clever at recognizing things like body language and, like, tone and so on. You know what I mean? That he can... But, Nick, I mean,
I'd never seen that before. By the way,
me either. I know, me either. And so that's why I want to show it to you, is because it just breaks a certain narrative. It's like, I mean, when I came on the scene with Stephen Hawking, he was a robot voice. He was the smartest man ever, theoretical astrophysicist, and like, you know, black holes and, you know, yada yada yada. You know, he's on the Epstein list. He's on the Epstein like flight logs. Apparently, he went to the island. But that's a whole other thing about it. Like, did Stephen Hawking?
If my dick didn't work, but I could still go look.
No. Would you?
I'd go to strip clubs. I don't need to go to Epstein Island.
Would you go to Pedophile Island?
No,
if your dick didn't work?
No, I'd go to titty bars.
If your dick didn't work, you go to titty bars?
I want to see boobies. I want to see them.
I mean, you can see them anywhere. My point is...
Not right here.
I'm just saying. Even the horniest robot chair guy ever in the history of things, right? Is he still getting on the plane and going to Epstein Island? He has to have like a gaggle of handlers. Where's this guy going on his own? Nurses? Who's wiping his ass? You know what I'm saying?
Or are you saying
the whole Stephen Hawking team
total fraud
went to fucking Epstein Island and participated in the fucking shenanigans? I don't know what is real anymore.
Hey, pause it real quick. I gotta get another beer.
All right, so one more thing I want to introduce you to or talk to you about is this. This is Michael Malice, who I absolutely love. And in pure Michael Malice form, he's going to talk about something called Awful. You ready?
Sure.
I think people underestimate to what extent privileged, especially white women, are willing to sacrifice their children for the altar of status. For them, having a trans kid is like winning the lottery, right? And you laugh, but it's really the case. It's very disturbing. Only ones bringing their kids to drag shows, because for these affluent white female liberals, Awfuls, a man in makeup is like the second coming. And, you know, they're showing dad or they're...
Okay. Let's do that again. Affluent, white female liberals.
They're awful.
Awfuls. I mean, it's just...
Listen, it comes... First of all, I was like, listen, this is a lecture about white women coming from a white guy. And the irony, whatever. It doesn't matter. Like, it's fine.
Well, I think...
But
okay,
hold on.
Yeah.
I immediately shifted. And when he said awful, I didn't... Yeah. It just pushed play. Yeah.
The only ones bringing their kids to drag shows, because for these affluent white female liberals, Awfuls, a man in makeup is like the second coming. And, you know, they're showing dad or their husband or whoever how enlightened they are, because this is what corporate media tells them. So they can't wait to bring their kids and show how with the program they are. So they are a menace. And this, in my opinion, is Munchausen's by proxy. You know, they're torturing their kids for the sake of status and accolades.
Yeah, that's such an interesting take on, I mean, that this political kind of wavelength. I mean, if, you know, manifests this idea in like, you know, trans and this and that. But
yeah, you didn't close it out yet there, Joshua.
But the idea of like people getting like social status
affluent,
out of
white female,
out of manipulating
liberty,
their kids.
Awful.
Like, yeah, you know. Brought
to you by a white man, Michael Malice, who has privilege at all.
What do you mean by that? Through his whiteness, he has privilege?
He's probably not poor.
Well, yeah, but do you know his story?
No,
okay,
I'm just saying, that's fine. I'm just saying that, like, I'm just adding to the joke for me.
Okay, I get what you're saying. I'm saying that's not the joke for me. The joke for
I
me
love
is
awful. Awful's great.
Me too.
That's
I love it because I think that there's this element of like college educated women are kind of fall into this category, this idea of like, you know, I know better than you about, you know, like what creates a great society. And you know, again, this idea that through that prism that they value having a trans kid in a way that like would they ever and probably do and necessarily do like promote that you know, and that their kid. I mean, man, my kids play soccer, Nick. You know what I'm saying? Your kid does martial arts. Like, the idea that we lose that how influential we are in our kids' like behaviors is, like, ridiculous. And the idea that some women out there, like, they find their own value, their own status, their own, like, worth in life because they have this otherwise, you know, special kind of kid who needs this kind of special attention, so on and so forth. I think that's what that is. And so that
you're saying that they molded the child that way.
I think that's necessarily what that means by like awful, right? That they are getting social status by having this kid with this thing. It's like you can't necessarily like hope and pray your kids like, you know, whatever.
I hear what you have
R word.
Let me say the words here. What I'm hearing you say is it's something akin to they can't actually have a retarded child. They can't have a special needs child. They can't have an autistic child, but like the closest thing where they can get sympathy, empathy,
the social status of like having a more difficult life by way of this, and then something about that, like pay attention to me because you don't know what it's like to have a trans kid or special needs kid or whatever. Like again, and he described that as being like their, I don't know, he said Super Bowl or their whatever. They're like, that's the highest praise of them. I just think that's a super interesting take on the whole trans issue. I don't mean the whole trans issue like that. I just mean it's just an interesting take on the idea that some women in their kind of commitment to their political ideology manifest children in this space that it's only self-serving to the woman. I think that's kind of the theme of that. And I just think that's kind of like, I don't know, it's gross, obviously, but it's, like, interesting to kind of understand, if that makes any sense.
I hear you. I just think, also, I think it's fucking hilarious. Awful.
Yeah, awful is great.
Affluent, Michael Mouse, one of the white, best, yeah. Female, liberal.
Yeah.
Like, that, you know all the time we talk about it, and there's many times you have to say, white people. We honestly do have to thank white people for a lot of things.
But poor white people don't fit this, right? Because they're too busy trying to put food on the table. They don't have to, like poor white people.
They got other problems.
They're not worried about.
They're awful in their own way, but they ain't
awful
like this.
It's like they're
one.
Telling their kids, "Can you just not get in trouble? Because I got fucking two shifts today, right?" Like they don't have time to have a trans kid. You know what I mean? Like they don't have time to have a trans kid. They're too fucking busy with two jobs.
That's fucking great.
That's the point. That's what awful is. All right, man. Let's get out of here, bro.
Are we done?
I think so. We're done.
All
right. We're done. So, we've been an hour.
Yeah.
There's more to talk about. We're going to try this again.
So, Joshua, you know how we end this.
Quick outro. Ready?
What are you going to do on the same next podcast?
Same thing we do every night, Pinky.
You fucked it all up.
I showed the kids Pinky in the brain the other day, and they're like, it's not funny, Dad.
Shalom. Fucking hit the outro.
Take over the world. Boom.
Your Highness, Secretary General, Your Majesties, Your Royal Highnesses, Presidents, Prime Ministers, Ministers, ladies and gentlemen.